Harbor Audio presents 1356 by Bernard Cornwell, performed by Jack Hawkins.
The English are riding no one knows where. Warning sent in 14th century France, quoted in A Fool and His Money by Anne Roe. Prologue. Carcassonne. He was late. Now it was dark and he had no lantern, but the city's flames gave a lurid glow that reached deep into the church and gave just enough light to show the stone slabs in the deep crypt where the man struck at the floor with an iron crow. He was attacking a stone incised with a crest that showed a goblet wreathed by a buckled belt on which was written Calix Meis Inebrians. Sun rays carved into the granite gave the impression of light radiating from the cup. The carving and inscription were worn smooth by time, and the man had taken little notice of them, though he did notice the cries from the alleyways around the small church. It was a night of fire and suffering, so much screaming that it smothered the noise as he struck the stone flags at the edge of the slab to chip a small space into which he could thrust the long crow. He rammed the iron bar down, then froze as he heard laughter and footsteps in the church above. He shrank behind an archway just before two men came down into the crypt. They carried a flaming torch that lit the long, arched space and showed that there was no easy plunder in sight. The crypt's altar was plain stone with nothing but a wooden cross for decoration, not even a candlestick, and one of the men said something in a strange language. The other laughed, then both climbed back to the nave where the flames from the streets lit the painted walls and the desecrated altars. The man with the iron crow was cloaked and hooded in black. Beneath the heavy cloak he wore a white robe that was smeared with dirt, and the robe was girdled with a three-knotted cord. He was a black friar, a Dominican, though on this night that promised no protection from the army that ravaged Carcassonne. He was tall and strong, and before he had taken his vows he had been a man at arms. He had known how to thrust a lance, cut with a sword, or kill with an axe. He had been called Sire Ferdinand de Rodez, but now he was simply Fra Ferdinand. Once he had worn mail and plate, he had ridden in tournaments and slaughtered in battle, but for 15 years he had been a friar and had prayed each day for his sins to be forgiven. He was old now, almost 60, though still broad in the shoulders. He had walked to reach this city, but the rains had slowed his journey by flooding the rivers and making fords impassable, and that was why he was late, late and tired. He rammed the crow beneath the carved slab and heaved again, fearing that the iron would bend before the stone yielded. Then suddenly there was a coarse, grating sound, and the granite lifted and then slid sideways to offer a small gap into the space beneath. The space was dark because the devil's flame light from the burning city could not reach into the grave, and so the friar knelt by the dark hole and groped. He discovered wood, and so he thrust the crow down again. One blow, two blows, and the wood splintered, and he prayed there was no lead coffin inside the timber casket. He thrust the crow a last time, then reached down and pulled pieces of splintered wood out of the hole. There was no lead coffin. His fingers, reaching far down into the tomb, found cloth that crumbled when he touched it. Then he felt bones. His fingers explored a dry eye hole, loose teeth, and discovered the curve of a rib. He lay down so he could stretch his arm deeper, and he groped into the grave's blackness and found something solid that was not bone. But it was not what he sought. It was the wrong shape. It was a crucifix. Voices were suddenly loud in the church above. A man laughed and a woman sobbed. The friar lay motionless, listening and praying. For a moment he despaired, thinking that the object he sought was not in the tomb. But then he reached as far as he could, and his fingers touched something wrapped in a fine cloth that did not crumble. He fumbled in the dark, caught hold of the cloth, and tugged. Some object was trapped inside the fine cloth, something heavy, and he inched it towards him, then caught proper hold of it and drew the object free of the bone hands that had been clutching it. He pulled the thing from the tomb and stood. He did not need to unwrap it. He knew he had found La Malice, and in thanks he turned to the simple altar at the crypt's eastern end and made the sign of the cross. "Thank you, Lord," he said in a murmur, "and thank you, Saint Peter, and thank you, Saint Junien. Now keep me safe." The friar would need heavenly help to be safe. For a moment he considered hiding in the crypt till the invading army left Carcassonne, but that might take days, and besides, once the soldiers had plundered everything easy, they would open the crypt's tombs to search for rings, crucifixes, or anything else that might fetch a coin. The crypt had sheltered La Malice for a century and a half, but the friar knew it would offer him no safety beyond a few hours.